You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Shep. 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles, over 4,500 on the Sonic, over 12,500 on the Tahoe. You won't believe what you can say. Stop in, check it out right now at Lakewood Shep. Continue Analytics Week right now as we go around hockey, brought to you by Cougar Paint and Collision. There, when you need them, call or stop in. No appointment required. They will see you right away. You can trust Cougar Paint and Collision. We are joined by a four-time Memorial Cup champion as both a player and a coach. He is also now the head coach for Stockton in the American Hockey League. Ryan Huska joins us, also a former teammate of Strud. So probably the toughest thing he's ever had to endure in his life. Ryan, we appreciate having you on. And now we do want to differentiate. Obviously, analytics for pros is obviously very different than, you know, anything when it comes to hockey and training for young kids. But as a guy who played at a high level yourself, and now you're coaching at a high level, what's been maybe the biggest change in how you view analytics today than 5-10 years ago?
Well, hello, and guys, thanks for having me, I guess, first. And please don't hold it against me that I had to play with Strud for a couple of years.
Well, I mean, I only got you 2 Memorial Cup rings. What more do you want? I mean, get on my back again?
Well, we'll talk about analytics and the analytics we used to use when Strud was on the ice in a little bit. But listen, when you think about analytics now compared to 5-10 years ago, really there weren't any. I mean, when I was coaching in Kelowna, we would, of course, look for our chances for and chances against. Junior hockey and the American Hockey League are a little different in regards to personnel that you have that can help you out with the stat taking or whatever analytics that you're looking for. So there was very few. It was just the things that we could keep and what coaches thought were important at that time to help our teams win games. Now, because of the big shift, there's a lot more attention on a lot of different areas of the game, and you use them to a point, I guess I'll say. You use them to a point, but there's also a lot of feel that still comes into the game. But I think you would be doing your team and your players a disservice if you didn't look at the information that is in front of you right now.
How knowledgeable are the players, Husk? You know, you coach in the AHL. Are those players, do they have a full understanding of what these numbers may or may not mean to them?
No, they wouldn't. I, in my own opinion, I don't think they would. So I don't necessarily know if guys know what a Corsi is, to be honest with you. Or, well, mainly because we don't get to keep that stat in the American Hockey League. So the players don't see it all the time. I'd imagine when they get called up and they're maybe looking at their stat line at the end of the night, or if they're looking for things, they'll see some things, maybe do a little bit of homework and figure out what one thing might mean or what another thing might mean, what it might mean. But we don't really have access to all of that here. I mean, you look at your face-off stats. We have the simple ones. We have your efficiency ratings in regards to getting pucks out of our zone and into the offensive zone. Those ones are important to us. But I often kind of chuckle because when we were playing hockey, a lot of times our coaches would yell at us, make sure you get pucks in and you get pucks out. It's basically the same thing, but now they put a different kind of term on it.
So what's that term? They're talking about carry in or carrying out?
Well, sure. Efficiency ratings, I guess.
Okay.
When you think about how efficient your team is in getting the puck out of their own zone, clean, with control. Like, that's something that's a stat that we look at and is important for our team. And oftentimes you can tell if your team's having a good night based on that rating. And the same holds true at the other blue line. How many times are we getting that puck into the zone under control successfully? Because when you flip it around, if you're not doing a good job, you're turning pucks over at that key area of the ice. Both blue lines are critical to winning hockey games. And that's something that's an important one for us because it really gives us a good indication of where our team's at and how we're playing as a group.
You talk about how you want to use the analytics, but maybe you don't get, I don't know if paralysis by analysis is the right way to use it. But as a coach, when you're seeing the numbers, which ones have you found for you personally that you, okay, you know what, I really think this one helps, where other ones, based on what I'm coaching, what I'm seeing, sometimes those numbers don't necessarily reflect to you know, my style of coaching?
Yeah, that's a good question again. Face-offs, of course, are something that we utilize here. So it's easy for us to see who's having a good night or a tough night against a certain player on the ice. We don't have the ability to look to see who may be more successful on a certain line with which player. Those are all things that we're slowly trying to get ourselves into. When we talk about analytics in the American Hockey League, we have a stat package that we have to compile at the end of the night for the Calgary Flames, and we submit that up to them. And from there, they can kind of, when they're watching the game, they get a better idea of what we're all about. But ours are much simpler than some of the analytics that people talk about in the NHL level. You know, we go to our 5-on-5 chances, 4 5-on-5 chances against. We go into power play special teams like that. Who's getting our chances? Where are they coming from? So we don't really go into a great deal of depth. But if there is really one besides face-offs that I think are important is when at the end of the night you look at the chance report and you see one of your players was involved in 4 or 5 positive chances and only maybe one against, you know that player had a pretty good feel or had a pretty good game. But a lot of times I find myself after a game looking at a guy's chance report and I would sit here and think, man, he had a terrible night. And then I'll get the report in front of me and it shows me that he was like a +5 on our chance report. So it kind of makes you reevaluate it at times. So you go back and watch the game and maybe reassess what you thought his game was like. So that one comes into play a lot for us here.
Ryan Huska joins us, and that's an interesting comment, Ryan, because as a we all are going to have own opinions on a game, and even as a coach behind the bench, you can't see everything. You see a lot, but you obviously probably can't have everything come in. Oh, okay, I remember that chance and that chance. Having had that occur a few times, have you had to watch the film and then say, okay, you know what? Maybe what I'm seeing is just based on an inaccurate hunch, so I've got to change how I view the game.
You know what? Another good question. And sometimes it is the case. I think when you might be hard on a player or down on a player for whatever reason, because you're seeing a certain aspect of his game that you're not liking. But sometimes when you're in it, and Strud will be able to either agree with me or disagree, but when you're in it, sometimes you don't see all the good that a player is doing. And at times when you get a chance to sit back and maybe reflect after the game, once you're kind of calmed down a little bit and your emotion or energy is starting to leave your body, I think it does maybe force you to reevaluate what you're thinking a player is doing at that, I guess, current time. I mean, there's a lot of good things that players do, but sometimes we get in that space where all you're seeing is the bad things that a guy's doing. So sometimes it does help bring you back and say, hey, this guy's actually doing a lot of good things.
We had Drake Borowski on, and he's been coaching for a number of years, and both of you have kind of used the same word, turnovers. You know, and I personally think turnovers are huge. And when I watch a game, that's what I kind of watch for, because to me it seems like turnovers turn into scoring chances against. So as you're watching this develop, you know, are there different kinds of turnovers? So for that, I mean, like, you know, if we're on the rush and there's a turnover, a 1-on-2, and you know, maybe bad decision, instead of getting it deep, you try to beat someone, or maybe a turnover where someone just makes a good play against you defending. Like, do you grade them differently, Husk, or is it turnover to turnover?
Well, we don't really grade them differently. A turnover is a turnover, but I think you put a lot, you know, more emphasis on the ones that are in the critical areas of the game. And that's where I touched on the blue lines before. I'm good with guys in the offensive zone. If they're going to try to be creative and try to make a play and they think they see something and something happens and the puck gets turned over, hey, they're trying to generate some offense for us. In those situations, we just ask them to make sure they're one of the hardest guys coming back to our own zone. But if they're trying to make a play right at the blue line, oftentimes those are the dangerous areas, because your defensemen are trying to get themselves up in the play. And when you're turning pucks over there, more often than not, their odd man rushes against. And when you're playing against good hockey teams, they make you pay. And in today's game, when the difference between winning and losing is often one goal, if you're giving up too many odd man rushes because you don't manage the puck well at the right points or the critical points of on the ice surface, then you're asking for trouble. So it's the certain areas, I think, Strud, where we feel turnovers are a little bit more critical. And I talk about in the offensive zone. In the defensive zone, we give our guys a lot of leeway to use the middle of the ice on our breakouts, and sometimes turnovers happen in there, similar to the ones you used to make all the time when we played together. But those are the ones that at times, as much as you hate it, you're okay with it, because they're trying to do the right thing and allow us to get out of the zone under control.
Ryan Huska joins us, head coach of the Stockton Heat in the American Hockey League, a four-time Memorial Cup champion, of course, as a player and a coach, joining us. And Ryan, as you talked about how, you know, when you first coached, the analytics in a decade have changed a lot. And are you hesitant to sometimes, like, is there been one statistic that you've really found you like a lot that maybe 5 or 6 years ago, A, you didn't know about, or you were skeptical of, that's changed your opinion?
I was really skeptical of analytics in general when it first started to become that buzzword, because I felt at the time that coaching was a lot about feel, and you're on the bench and you see which player is playing hard or playing the way you're asking them to play, and then I think you made your decisions based on that a lot of times. But now that I think it's been more of a norm over the last little while, I think you have to use that information. I think it makes you a better coach, because you're, at the end of the day, trying to figure out how to put guys in the best situations possible. And sometimes the stats that you get shown in between periods or you have, you know, leading up into a game allows you to maybe put a matchup against a certain pairing because that gives them an advantage. And that's our job as coaches. And at the end of the day, if we're getting the right matchups or if we're getting the advantages based on one or two little pieces of information, then we're going to win some more hockey games, and then I'm able to keep my job.
Yeah, that is ultimately an important thing. There's no doubt. Ask, how much, though, when you see something in the game and you see the numbers pop up and you're surprised, or whether you're surprised or not, it just reveals something, does that affect or does that influence how your next practice or week of practice may look?
It will, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of times, like a good example is, you know, when you track your shots, one of the stats when you track your shots, if we have a night or two nights in a row where everything's coming from the outside, there's a pretty good chance one of our next practices is going to be a lot about battle to get themselves inside. There'll be a lot of point shots with traffic. There's going to be a lot of net driving. So you do, I think, pick some things up based on what you're seeing your team play like. And as I said, if you're perimeter, our next couple practices are going to be a lot harder in regards to getting to the net. Goalie coaches don't like it in that situation, but you have to find a way to reverse those trends sooner than later. And that's typically the way we do it. So if we see an ugly stat sheet where there's little dots all over the outside and not much on the inside, then we're going to spend some more time and work on addressing that with our players.
Analytics weeks. Continues. We have Ryan Huska, the head coach of the Stockton Heat, join us. Ryan, thanks for sticking through the break. I do have a question. A lot of text people wondering that if the introduction of analytics is another contributor to coaching taking over the sport, the game seems more exciting when the little aspect it wasn't overcoached. And you talked about it right away, is you want to use some of it, but not too much of it. How do you balance that, where you don't get caught in overcoaching?
Well, I think for coaches, when that word overcoaching comes in, it's a dangerous phrase, because when you are overcoaching, your team is thinking too much and they're not playing free or to their capabilities. So I think everybody that's been a coach for a little while is very mindful of overcoaching and putting too much in the players' heads, because you're not getting the best out of your guys when they're overthinking. And that's something that I feel like I learned during my time in Kelowna, that sometimes less is more. And if you're going to try to pound more and more information into their heads, oftentimes you're going to get a product that looks pretty flat on the ice. So at the end of the day, we have to find a way to have success and continual success. So it's little bits at a time if you want to get that point across. And that's the way we've tried to be during my time in Kelowna. That's the way I've tried to be here in Stockton and when we were in Glens Falls. Because the guys, they come to the rink every day with the right intentions. They want to bring their very best all the time, and they want to play well. Like, they want to make you happy for the effort that they're putting forth. And if you're giving them too much, they're overthinking things and they're not playing the way they should or could be playing.
Husk, every player has their own way of approaching, right? Whether it's a forward that scores from perimeter or gets to the middle of the net or whatever, everyone does things differently. But one example we have here in Edmonton is Chris Russell. And Chris Russell is a guy that is very polarizing when it comes to analytics. But, one of the critiques he has, well, amongst a few things, is that he backs off. People feel the numbers suggest he backs off the blue line too often. But when you look at a player like Chris Russell, he still gets the job done. When you look at the eye test, I feel like he still gets the job done. Is it difficult sometimes to marry a guy getting a job done, maybe in an uglier or more unconventional way than maybe the numbers would or your eye test would suggest?
It's a good question. Again, you're throwing a lot of good questions. You're kind of surprising me, Strutt.
Well, Gregor gave me that one.
Listen, I think, with certain guys, they may be guys that when analytically, when you look at their game, people might say, ooh, but there's a reason why certain players keep getting re-signed all the time. And Chris Russell, from the short time that I was around when he was in Calgary, was a guy that did everything right in regards to what a coach is asking for of him. He blocks shots fearlessly. He competes every time he's on the ice. And those are the type of guys that you win with. So that's why sometimes I think you have to still use a lot of feel, because those players that are often your glue guys or your guys that really show up and come to play when the games are on the line or when you're in the third round of the playoffs, often they're not the prettiest players in regards to analytics, but they are very important to a team and to teams having success. So you have to be able to still use your gut on players like that who maybe the analytics say isn't doing a great job, because if you're to ask coaches, oftentimes those guys are often ones that we trust and rely on in all sorts of different situations.
Ryan Huska joins us, a head coach of the Stockton Heat. Now, Ryan, when you take in some of the analytics, and let's use, you know, zone exits. A lot of people are, you know, they track zone exits for defensemen. And if you see a guy who's struggling on that, obviously then you got to look at the video to say, okay, well, were the wingers in the right place? Did he have an outlet to pass? Is he missing the outlet? There's obviously more factors that go into it. But if you have a guy who's struggling for whatever reason on zone exits, do you then have certain drills you do to try to regain his confidence so he excels better in that one spot?
Yeah, and a lot of times we'll show him when he's making a good play on an exit instead of showing him the ones where he's making a mistake. I think when a guy is struggling, they don't need to continually see the areas that they are having a hard time with. So we try to give him a little bit more of the him doing a good job in those situations. But there are drills that you would maybe grab a guy before or after practice and just, it's almost putting him through a little bit of repetition just to get his feel back. And that might be him just going back for pucks and making 15 passes to the middle, 15 passes to the wall, whatever the case may be, just to get his mind wrapped around it again. And I think with a lot of players, especially the ones at the higher level, they're all good hockey players for a reason. Everybody goes through their ups and downs, and finding a way to get that feel back sooner than later is our job as coaches. And oftentimes the players don't really need that much other than a push that you do a good job with this, and let's work on it a little bit more after practice.
Husk, you know, I see a lot of pictures of you, our families, our friends, and I can tell that, you know, you're kind of just getting to the midway point, maybe your coaching career, because your body's starting to get a little round. So you've been around for a while, and, you know, you're starting to see, you were at the beginning when analytics just started, and kind of the middle part of it all now. Where in the next 10 years you see this moving for coaches, specifically this analytics movement?
Well, I think it'll be... a lot of it, I think, is going to be about maybe who's bringing more success to what line. Who are you playing against this certain person? I think it's going to be that information maybe before a game that a coach can look at while he's preparing, like a player would be preparing. I think getting a little bit more detailed in that regard might give you, you know, an advantage during a game. But I think there's always going to be a real feel for it, and I think the best coaches in the game, they coach based on feel, the way their team is playing, who's maybe playing really well that needs to be pushed up a line in order to get another line going, who's not playing well that maybe needs to be put somewhere else. A lot of that's based on feel, and I think the best coaches are the guys that have that instinct, and they can take some of the analytics that they're working with now, but I do think it's a lot of what they're feeling is happening during the game, and that's what makes them the elite coaches in the NHL.
How do you improve your feel as a coach? Because I'm guessing when you first started, I would assume now you feel more confident in that feel per se. How do you work on that aspect as a coach?
It's funny. Every year when you start, the game seems so fast all the time. When you're on the bench for the first couple of games, you're like, wow, these guys keep getting faster every year. But I think as the players kind of get used to it, so do you. And there's times when you get emotionally caught up in the game and you lose track of what's going on. And that's something I think I'll always have to try to do a better job at. You want your team to do so well that sometimes you miss some of the things that you should be watching for in regards to a potential mismatch or something in regards to your line. That's one thing that, as a coach, I think you have to continually improve on, but it's that feel, I guess, guys. I keep going back to that, and I know I probably sound a little bit like a broken record. It's that feel, and if they would have had stats or more stats when we were playing junior hockey, Shred probably would have led the league in cross-ice dumps, little things like that. made him who he was today.
Husk, I can tell you've been wanting, you want to tell this story about when I scored, I think it was my fifth goal of the year, a slapper from the point, and I celebrated. I know, I think I got you an assist. It was your fifth assist of the year, I believe, that year. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I really remember it really well. And I don't think it was your fifth. It might have been your second. So he celebrated like it was the Stanley Cup winning goal, and he went down on one knee and gave the old pumper, but he lost his balance, which often happened with Strud, and he fell over right into the wall and kind of made a bit of a mockery of his goal. But that's why we loved him.
You know, it's funny. Actually, we were winning like 7-1, I think. Then I scored the goal, and I did that. And I did the pumpernickel, and I fell into the referee. Just a gong show. Just a complete
and then
gong.
He yelled at then he yelled at our trainer because his edges or his feet weren't done correctly.
It's so bad. It is so bad.
True, too. Now, right, you...
Very true.
As it evolves, you know, analytics at the NHL level, and it seeps down to the American League and the East Coast League and, you know, Western Hockey League, you mentioned earlier that, you know, some players maybe don't know what Corsi is. And do you find that younger players now are more, do they ask questions about it? And do you want your players asking questions based on analytics, or would you prefer them to still be based on system and skill set?
I think you get a little bit of both. I mean, there isn't a lot of analytics at our level in regards to, you know, guys asking what their numbers were. They'll come in and ask to see the shot chart or where their chances came from or how many turnovers they were credited with. That stuff, they for sure come in. Our centermen every morning, they come in and they want to know their faceoff percentage. So that, for sure, they do all the time down here. There's no question about that. So it's the other ones, I guess, how many times they left our zone, or like you talked about a defense and leaving their own zone with possession or making the clean exit out of our zone. Those ones, we don't really have the ability to track those numbers. Some of the centers, I would assume a little bit further east or maybe in more of a traditional hockey market, might have some people that can help out in that area. But for us, we don't have the ability to really track that to the point where we feel it would be beneficial, you know, so we can use with our players.
Now, when you're tracking shots, and, you know, you obviously have, I'm assuming you have where they come from, number one, but does it go more in depth as far as backhand, forehand, you know, the guy had time to get the shot off or he is rushed before he had to shoot it? Like, or is it just simple where the shot's coming from?
It's for us, it's simply where they're coming from, but we also have whether or not the shot hit the net, whether the goalie had to make a save, really the type of chance it was it a grade eight chance? And then we also factor in, who assisted on that chance or shot for. So if it's a chance that we deem to be a quality grade A chance, the guy that made the play to set that chance up, we would also include him in our chance for helpers, we would call it. So he's also getting credit for assisting on that one chance that we had.
Last one for me here. When you talk about chances, you know, I get the sense that every team tracks their chances differently. For you, does it have to be a shot on net? Like, does it have to make contact with the goalie or the net for it to count as a chance?
No, not for us. And, you know, sometimes there's guys that get left alone in the slot, and for whatever reason, the guy will rip it wide. We classify it as a chance because there was a breakdown somewhere on our part. So there's sometimes a fine line where we have a few little arguments in our coaching office in regards to yes, it is, or no, it isn't. But, if there's a situation where a guy's, you know, point blank and we have a guy that lies out, flat out to block a shot, for us, that's not a chance because we have a guy that defended the right way and he did whatever he had to do to take that chance away. So there's a little different. Certain situations are chances for us, some aren't. We try to make it based on, are we in position, I guess, to defend properly? And if we are and we're able to stop that chance from really happening, then there's no chance happening. If we're not, someone gets a grade A chance and blows it wide or fans on it or breaks a stick, that's still a chance for us.
And at the American League level, Ryan, what are you tracking? What statistics are you tracking for your goaltenders other than just, you know, the basic shots and save percentage?
You know, our goalie coach goes into basically everything. You know, they have a button in regards to, you know, our cutting our video that's just goalie touches. So anything that touches the goaltender when he's out playing the pucks, the types of saves that he's making, they track his movements, everything. So I think that's one area of the game, as you guys have probably talked a lot about, where it's really come a long way. Everybody has goalie coaches. Calgary's got a full-time development coach that's with us here in Stockton that's here all the time working with our goaltenders. So I think that's the one area that there's been huge advances in, and statistically speaking as well. Their game is really broken down the same way we break player games down now as well. But anytime that puck comes near them, it touches them, it's being marked and their video is being cut based on their touches.
Ryan, really appreciate your time today. Thanks very much, and best of luck this season. And feel free to send us any of your Strudwick highlight tapes from over the years. He's been telling us about these stories. We've just never seen them.
There won't be many. Most of them, he was sitting in the stands looking for good-looking girls.
You know what's funny is that, you know, like I look at that team we had in Kamloops, and there's been so many guys go on to be, you know, obviously some amazing players, but coaches, you know, there's yourself, there's Keith McCambridge, you know, Scott Ferguson was working for a time, Steve Passmore was doing it, Nolan Baumgartner now at the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, I do, you know, they talk about in the NFL about that coaching tree that Bill Belichick is a part of. I think there's a coaching tree coming off Don Hay, who now is back in the WHL with the Kamloops Blazers. Is that fair, Husk?
Yeah, totally fair. He is such a – well, he's a mentor now for me, too. Every summer we talk. I talk to him over the course of the wintertime a lot. He really, I think, when you talk about young guys, he taught the game the right way. He really stressed the importance of work and compete and team play, but he really had a good handle on the system side of things, too, because he tries to make himself better, even at this age. He tries to make himself better keeping up on the way the game is played. So he's an unreal coach, and I think you do see some guys that are trying to follow a little bit in his footsteps, I guess, and take some of the lessons that we learned from him.
Ryan, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.